to go ahead and start the recording? Okay, welcome to the Q&A session for the Community Engagement Webinar. This is a follow-up session to the webinar that we hosted with our presenter, Kim McCoy. And Kim, thank you for joining us again. And as a reminder, Kim is the Community Health Planner with the Office of Public Health Practice at the Minnesota Department of Health. And we do have a couple questions that have come in previously that I want to go ahead and ask and get started, and then I'll open it up to other questions that folks on the line may also have that they want to ask. One question, Kim, is what have you found to be the best way to initially invite people to join a committee or coalition or a group to get involved with? Is it, you know, just your generic letter that goes out, phone calls, is there a combination? What have you seen to be most effective?
Yeah, thanks, Lori, and good afternoon, everybody. It's nice to be with you. I think there's a variety of approaches that you can take, and it partly depends on who the people are that you're inviting to join your committee and what you know about them. I mean, I know, for instance, I'm on the board for our neighborhood association, and we actually have several people who don't have email accounts yet. So while that seems very unlikely, it is important to know that about some of the people that you have on your committee, because obviously that would impact how you invite them. I think generally it's a good idea to make a personal connection, so a phone call to just introduce yourself, explain what the coalition is about. I do sometimes, start with an email to introduce myself, introduce the coalition. So I might send an introductory email first that says, here's some information about this coalition that we're starting. If you already have, for instance, a charge developed, a purpose defined, you could send that information out ahead of time, and then follow it up with a phone call so that you can, make that personal connection, answer questions that they might have, and provide some more detail that way.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anyone who has a follow-up question to that they'd like to ask?
Or some other approaches, if you've found other things that work. One thing I might add, Lori, is that if you're inviting somebody to join a coalition that's been established for a while,
mm-hmm.
It's probably a good idea to make a phone call and give them some information about kind of the history of the coalition and what the current status is, and if they're replacing somebody else on the coalition, to make some arrangements for that kind of transfer of information and the kind of continuation of that role.
Great, thank you. I noticed that someone doesn't have their line muted, so if everyone could just verify and check, either press your mute button on your phone or dial *6 to mute your phone. Thank you. Another question is, I think this has come up a lot. People come to the table with their own personal agendas and seems to constantly get in the way of what a committee does. And or there are also members of your committee who maybe because of their personal agenda are continually negative and sort of prevent the coalition or the group from making progress. Can you comment on how you've handled such situations in the past, Kim?
Sure. And I think there's a couple different aspects to that question. First, with the issue of personal agendas, people are going to have them. I mean, you can't avoid that. People come to the table with their own ideas about what they think they can gain from the coalition, maybe what they can contribute. And their agencies, the agencies or the populations that they're representing may have other agendas as well. So people are going to have agendas. You can't avoid that. I think it's important to get those out on the table at the beginning, so that you understand the perspectives of all the people who are at the table and what they hope to get out of their work on the coalition. The other thing that we talked about on the webinar is that it's really important to be clear up front about what the purpose of the coalition is. And so, you know, you can acknowledge that each member of the coalition might have another agenda, but that it's important to find out how that agenda links to the overall purpose of the coalition, and to just recognize that they are there to represent their organization in terms of how to make that coalition move forward and achieve the broader purpose. So I think that clarity up front is really important. Acknowledging those different agendas up front is really important. And then if you find that, you know, people aren't sticking to the purpose of the coalition, if they have some, you know, negative energy that they're bringing to the table, I think, again, that's when it's important to make that individual connection to, you know, as soon as you see something that's having an impact on the way that the coalition functions, to address that immediately. So to make a phone call to that person, maybe even, you know, set up a face-to-face meeting if you think that might be more effective. But, you know, make a one-to-one connection with that purpose and just, you know, kind of put it out there. Say that, and you don't have to say, obviously, that some, you know, you don't have to attack the person. I think what's important is to say, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I'm hearing, and this is, you know, maybe how it's impacting the overall coalition. And so just talk about, you know, what's happening, why is it happening, and how can we change it together. But I think to make that one-to-one connection, and again, to be really clear up front about what your purpose is and about what the role of each member of the coalition is, can go a long way toward kind of getting at the potential conflicts with personal agendas. Anybody else have anything to add to that?
Okay, thank you, Kim. Are there any other questions that anyone else has right now before I go on?
Well, I'm curious about the mention a couple of times about term limits and the benefits of term limits rather than trying to keep people on as long as they're willing to stay.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, you know, from my experience, first of all, it depends on the duration of your coalition. If you've got one that's going to be, that's sort of just ongoing, unlimited, and you know people, it's going to be in existence for a long time, I think it can be a good way to bring new energy, new perspectives, new skills, new resources to your coalition. It can be a good way to kind of, you know, retire folks who maybe have been involved with the coalition for a long time and, you know, maybe are starting to get burnt out or aren't contributing as much as they initially were. But, you know, there are a lot of, I think there are a lot of good reasons to bring new membership to the committee. Now, that said, I think you have to balance that against, you know, the value of having people who are passionate about the issue, who are very knowledgeable of the issue. You know, one thing that we've done on a coalition that I've been a part of is that we have term limits. So terms are 2 years. And we limit the number of times that a person can serve in that position consecutively. So for instance, it's a 2-year term. So every 2 years, they have to be reelected or reappointed to the coalition, and they can only serve for 3 consecutive terms. So their maximum would be 6 years on the coalition. So that kind of gives a little more flexibility. But I'd be curious to hear about what other people think about that idea.
Anyone have thoughts they want to share? Art, did that answer your question?
Yeah, it was helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions?
This is Michelle from the American Cancer Society, and I just want to add a comment about the tendency to add a timeline to the commitment. I like that, and I find that some of the members on our board like it, because most people always ask you, what is the level of commitment? If you put a year or 2 years, you know, people can decide whether or not they want to be a part of our coalition or not, and then also it allows other people, other members, to participate in it if we have a short commitment, and perhaps we can open up to new members.
Yeah, that's a great point, Michelle. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Another question that we had, Kim, was we know that, you know, truly effective, meaningful community engagement can take a lot of time. And I'm wondering if there's any way to shortcut the process, especially in situations where you have grant deadlines or other time restrictions that require that you really get that engagement moving quickly.
I think the short answer to that is no. There isn't really a shortcut to the process. Now, I think, you know, this partly goes back to the difference between community engagement and coalition building. You know, I think if you're building a coalition, it's critical to spend that time up front, you know, making personal connections, getting to know people, helping the coalition figure out how to function as a group, getting organized, defining your purpose, doing all of those upfront steps to make sure that everybody's clear about what's expected and about where you're headed and how you're going to get there. Now, community engagement, as we talked about, you know, can be much more flexible. So, you know, there certainly are kind of shorter term things that you can do just to get input from the community. So if you just need feedback on a particular issue, you know, you can do focus groups, you can do surveys, you can do things like that, that, you know, if you're just looking for a way to sort of gather information or gather opinions that are going to contribute to a larger effort. But I think in terms of, you know, true coalition building and really bringing a group together to spend a significant amount of time working on a particular issue or a particular initiative, you really do need to spend that time up front, really helping the group form.
Thank you.
Any other thoughts about that?
Move through those stages, group development. Other comments or questions related to that? And the last question that I had is, what are some ways to keep folks at the table if they don't want to take on any responsibility, especially related to implementation? So, you know, the purpose of this group is to do planning and then folks to carry the burden for carrying out the plan regarding implementation or sharing of resources, whether that be time or materials or whatever, and you have members who are just, they don't want to take on that responsibility for implementation. They just want to be part of the group. How do you handle that, and how do you handle letting them know what's really in it for them, and convince them that it's important that everybody collectively come together to provide this service because there is no new funding?
Yeah, that's a huge challenge, and if anybody has a silver bullet for that, I'd love to hear it, because we certainly haven't figured it all out yet. But I think, you know, there are a few things that you can do, and, you know, I'm going to reiterate some of the things that we already talked about, but I think, first of all, you know, being clear when you invite people to participate in the coalition that implementation is part of their role, that it's not just going to be about setting priorities and developing a plan and assessing needs, that, you know, everybody is expected to take part in the implementation of the plan when that happens. And, you know, I think one way to kind of demonstrate the importance of their role is as part of that assessment process. I think if you can, you know, as when you're doing your assessment, make part of that a capacity assessment so that you're showing, you know, okay, we've identified these needs in the community, then also do a parallel assessment that says, you know, these are the resources that are available in our community to address these needs. And, you know, you might find that you have, you know, in the case of community health assessment, that you have a local health department that has a certain amount of capacity and can tackle certain issues, but that there certainly are gaps and that the health department isn't able to tackle everything, and so they have to rely on other resources in the community to address the needs of maybe particular population groups, particular geographic areas, maybe it's particular types of public health issues. But I think if you make that capacity assessment part of your overall assessment at the beginning, so that you can show those gaps in resources and why it's important that it's a community-wide effort, that can go a long way toward just demonstrating the need for those partners to take on an implementation role. I think the other way is, you know, when you ask for people, you ask your coalition members to identify their individual agendas at the beginning, it's going to be important for you to make the connection between their agenda and the purpose of the coalition and how those two things are somewhat codependent. So how one is going to, you know, feed into the other and vice versa, so that, again, they can see how implementation of the plan that you're developing is ultimately also going to benefit their organization or their organization's mission in some way. And then I think, you know, the other piece is just to build in accountability as you go. So as you develop a plan, build in those, you know, the performance measures, the indicators that you're going to look for to track implementation of your plan. And hopefully when you develop that plan, you assign particular responsibilities so that people know exactly what they're accountable for and who's responsible for what. So those are a few things that you can do at the outset. And I'll stop there and see if anybody else has thoughts about that or other strategies maybe that you've used to encourage implementation.
Well, I would just add that akin to the point that everybody comes with their own agendas, that sometimes you just seem to run into people who are not going to get involved, but still you want them on the coalition because they have a good name, and you can ask them that. I mean, I've asked people, okay, all right, we understand that you can't get involved or you don't have much time now, but can we use your name, and if that's helpful in the work? And also sometimes there are people who will say, well, yes, somebody can call us. They won't actively do anything, but if you're confident enough that they're supportive and know enough about the issue, say, well, can we use your name and ask folks to call if they want to talk with you or something like that. It's sort of a workaround. It's not a real solution, but it's sort of a workaround.
That's an excellent point. And I think just the thing to keep in mind in those kinds of situations, because I'm sure we've all been in those situations where you want somebody at the table for their reputation or for their name recognition. And so, you know, the important thing to keep in mind is that if everybody else is expected to do some implementation and there are one or two people who aren't, you're going to have to be able to speak to that issue and why it's okay for them to be at the table and not have a more active role.
Other thoughts? Okay, we have about 8 minutes remaining, and I'd like to see if there are any other questions that any of the participants had.
Hi, this is Michelle again. My question is, at our meetings and our part of our coalitions, what we have is a lot of times people are doing a lot of reporting, and it's not a lot of, you know, brainstorming and thinking of creative ways to implement our mission at the various locations. And I guess my question is, how do you get away from, or you need the reporting aspect of it, but how do you begin to engage your members and to, you know, kind of like coming out of that box and creating action plans and ways that they're really going to take hold of our mission and implement that at their various locations?
Thanks, Michelle. That's a good question. I think one thing I would recommend is that when you set up your agenda for meetings, you limit that reporting time to things that are either fairly urgent or maybe new information or things that the committee really needs in order to be able to act. And look for other ways that you can kind of communicate the general reporting information to the group outside the meeting. So maybe it's that you have, you know, a quarterly kind of newsletter or report that you send out to the group that they can review outside the meeting time. But that you really reserve that reporting time for kind of key pieces of information that need to be shared on that day, and that, you know, and that you maybe you vary who reports from meeting to meeting so that everybody has a chance for their voice to be heard, just not all at the same meeting. And then I think in terms of, you know, allowing for kind of more creative thinking process, some of that brainstorming, you know, obviously if you limit the amount of reporting time that you have in your meeting, then you can spend more time on those types of activities. I would certainly say, you know, look for those people on your coalition who have some skill in facilitation, who can help kind of organize and manage those creative thinking processes. There are also some really good resources out there. If you don't have, there's a book called Great Meetings, Great Results. It's just a really great reference kind of resource book on how to plan your meeting, how to organize it, some, you know, good ideas for interactive conversations and creative thinking strategies. I think I mentioned in the webinar there's also a facilitation process called Focused Conversation, which is just a way to, you know, it's kind of a different way to get input from folks about a particular issue or about a particular situation or maybe about an idea that you have. So, you know, definitely take some time to do a little research on conversation techniques or brainstorming techniques that are out there. And then I would say look for somebody on your coalition who has the skills to help lead that conversation well.
Michelle, I also wanted to add that this, just in June, we offered a classroom-based training on strengthening your facilitation skills, and we're hoping to be able to repeat that again next year if you have someone that you might want to send. But it was an intermediate to advanced class, so we did review the basics, but we also got into different tools that you can use to help structure that. We talked about how to develop a meeting agenda for results, and then also how to conduct various forms of evaluation of the meeting, because it's really important to understand which of your members are just coming for updates and, you know, want that information, and how many are, you know, really looking more for some action-oriented work, and how you can balance that. But we had a really nice tool for developing your agenda, and I think the facilitation skills are absolutely key in looking at different tools that you can use and apply to get the group into work mode. But I think the first suggestion of limiting that time for report outs and doing, you know, having the group to commit to another form of report outs, it really requires a strong commitment from them, because I have tried to transition groups to electronic or mailed, you know, short reports, and they end up not, you know, necessarily following through. So there's some things that you have to think through there, but definitely some options for you to look at.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? If there are no other questions, I have one question of the participants who were able to view the webinar. Is there any feedback that you would like to give on how useful the information was, and if there is additional information that needs to be addressed?
Hi, this is Michelle again. I really liked the webinar, and I found that the Coalition Effectiveness Inventory is something that I would definitely use at our next meeting, because we never really thought about, you know, as far as ranking and scoring ourselves on different levels. So I like to take that piece back to our coalition and see how we rate.
Great. Thank you. How about someone else? Okay, we have a quiet group today. Well, thank you all for your time, and I know that there were about, you know, 60 people who registered for the webinar, and not everyone chooses to follow up with the Q&A session, so thank you for joining us. We will record this, or have recorded this, and we'll post it for future listening. In case you want to pass on the webinar, you can also pass on the Q&A session. And we do ask that you please complete the electronic evaluation to give us some feedback. It's really important to us, and it's just, I think, 3 or 4 questions. So please complete that. And if you have any questions or need any follow-up technical assistance, please feel free to contact Kathy Tipton or myself, Laurie Call, at the Illinois Public Health Institute, and we can make sure to get your questions answered. So with that, I'd like to thank you, Kim, and also thank all the participants. And this concludes this portion of the Q&A session. Thank you.